Thank you. If you have specific questions about them, Julie's around, I'm around. If you want to look at them again, they're available in our office. You can look at yours specifically. The retakes will be in pretty much exactly the same format and pretty much exactly the same concepts. It's still about Bronfenbrenner. The interpretation will be different. The other items will be sort of similar. But the format will be the same. Okay? So the advice is to study it up and pass it on the second retake. Then you don't have to worry about it over spring break. And then you get the maximum points available for the retake, which will be 43 minus the number that you get wrong. Okay. I'm all set. If you're wondering what to do on spring break, I would recommend that you buy the Galinsky book if you have not. And if you have not, do it immediately because the bookstore is starting to send things back to the publisher. So if you haven't bought Galinsky's Six Stages of Parenthood, do that now before they all disappear and take it with you on spring break. It's a great lying on the beach book. You know, take your highlighter. Or you can underline. Have you tried underlining in sunblock? That works, highlighting in sunblock. Just put it on your finger and just rub it over the line. Okay. You'll enjoy the Galinsky book, I assure you. It's much more fun than anything else you're reading this semester. For today, the reading was Garbarino and Abramowitz, and I want to talk about that reading. If you haven't read it, you just haven't read it, but I want to talk about some of the basic concepts in it. As we start the main part of the course now, which is to talk about families, and particularly the family as a context for development. If people are developing within the family context, how does the family context affect or shape or direct or interfere with the person's development? So now we're getting to more of the fun part. The challenge for you is as you do the reading, and there are, 15 articles or so, and the Galinsky book, the articles are all on reserve, electronic reserve, so you can take them on spring break as long as you have access to a computer, you can ruin your spring break in lots of different ways, but that's one of the ways I recommend. Do the reading for this course. I'm sorry. But as you're doing it, as you are doing the reading for this course over spring break and working on assignment 5, just remember, I will be here working. Grading exercise 4, which you just turned in. And I don't expect a shred of sympathy from you. I do want postcards from exotic places, though. Okay, so as you're doing that reading, the point I was about to make is think developmentologically. Think Bronfenbrennerianly. The readings that you'll be doing do not use Bronfenbrenner's language. They just don't use it. But they are about relationships and mesosystems and microsystems and exosystem settings. And the challenge is for you to translate the reading that you do into developmentological terms so that you're understanding it according to developmentology. So you have to first understand what the reading is saying, what it's presenting, but then translate it so you understand how you would interpret it developmentologically. So, for example, if you're reading the article about how to have a divorce without killing your ex-spouse or your children, or how to have a good divorce, think about the advice that the author of that article is giving in terms of what kind of relationship do you try to create and maintain with the ex-spouse. What does it say about the mesosystem that the children are going to experience of mom's house and dad's house? Okay. The article will be saying specific things about how to maintain a mesosystem for the children that is positive for their development. Okay. Because mom's house and dad's house become mesosystem settings and they are linked. And the attitudes, the relationships between those two settings, the congruence, the way the communication goes, those are Bronfenbrennerian concepts. And you can see whether or not the author is saying everything possible that you can think of. Now, you can think about how the mesosystem settings might be congruent, and you can think about whether or not the author is really thinking about the children's development and how you might even think better than the author as you think about it as a mesosystem for the children. Okay? That's one example. Each article, I expect you to try to translate as you understand it into developmentological terms. What is it saying about development? What is it saying about the ecosystem of the people who are in it? Is that clear? That's the point from now on. Okay, let me give you a quick question. This is just to write in your notebook very quickly a list of the people in your family. In your family. Who are the people in your family? Second question to answer, what is a family? And when you're satisfied with your answer to that question, find somebody else to share definitions with and see how they differ and how you might change yours to accommodate the differences. See if you can come up with one you both agree on. You don't have to, but try it. Beth's checking to see if Megan included her in this. I don't detect anyone coming to blows. So your disagreements are not violent anyway. That's because you're all well socialized. What issues came up in defining family? Where did you find differences, or what are you not sure about? What? Neither of you said anything about being related. How many of you thought that the family was somehow people were related to each other? But neither of you did?
Like my cousin lives in Texas and she has four kids and I've only ever met one of them.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so personal knowledge
is
necessary.
And I wrote down people I'm not related to.
And you wrote down people you're not related to, but they're in your family. Okay. How about a couple of the definitions? Who has one they really like? People that you love but you may not like. Okay. Okay. We're going to... Okay, so you're going to exclude the necessity for blood. The emotional attachment.
My level of reciprocity.
Reciprocity. Did you have a should in there?
No, because
okay.
I think that...
I thought I heard a should. Okay. So it can be a family, even if you don't have the emotional attachment to each other.
I like...
Yes? Yes, okay. So loving is not necessary. Liking isn't necessary. Genetic kinship is not necessary. Reciprocity is not necessary. Emotional attachment isn't necessary. So who you got? Okay, so you want to go with kinship? Okay. Okay, the people who created you, and other people they create, and the people who created them. So you got your genetic lineage. Uh-huh. Okay, but you want to add to genetic kinship the legal bonds of adoption? Not really?
I don't want to add anything.
You what?
I don't want to add anything onto that.
Okay, but you think the legal bond is important? Okay. Would you include the legal bond of marriage? In Vermont, Massachusetts, okay, that includes adoption, marriage, civil union. Note that we're only 4 minutes into the discussion and we have Bronfenbrenner.
Yes!
I'm sorry, we already had Bronfenbrenner, the reciprocity. I wasn't ignoring you. Okay. Developmental dyad. All of them? All of them? If you include all of them, all your developmental dyads, you have to include teachers. What? All of your teachers? Okay. Primary dyad. Is that you wanted to at least have an observational dyad, right? If you've never seen them, they're not part of your family, even though they're genetically related. Yes. No, I can come up with worse ones,
okay.
But
gotcha.
Yeah. I can come up with worse. Okay, excluding, I mean, using any definition exclusively, such as the genetic one, gets you into deep doo-doo, because it excludes the couple.
Yeah, I was just thinking
of you were thinking about that.
I was just, like,
yeah, it's okay. You're not supposed in 1 minute.
Right.
In 1 minute, you're not supposed to come up with a perfect definition. But what it does is let you look at the issues, and you've identified a large number of the issues in trying to define family. Okay. It's very important. definition to try to come to, but you will find a variety of definitions. The definition of family is extremely important, and I urge you to consider the definitions of family that you run into very carefully, because they have very specific and sometimes unforeseen implications. People define family in different ways, and they usually have a purpose for the definition that they have written. Or they haven't thought about it, and they've just gone back to whatever somebody else said, and they haven't really thought about it. It's a very important issue, because family has legal implications, and it has implications, depending on how you define it, for psychological well-being. To define it in a way that includes only kinship, genetic kinship, in the first place, leaves out marriages. So, you know, how the hell do you get to be a couple in a family unless you include the legal bond? Or you can use the genetic kinship, but it includes only couples who have children. If a couple doesn't have children, they're not a family. If you use only the genetic, if you're genetically related down through your children and back up, if you use that, then you're excluding couples who don't have children. And maybe you want to do that. Maybe you want to define couple and family differently. And they're legitimate reasons for doing that. You can argue for them. In states that don't have civil unions, what do you do with a same-sex couple who have children, either through adoption or through surrogate parency? Parency? Can I do that? No, it's a noun. It's synonymous with parenthood. In HDFS 5, in talking about language, we talk about language as a generative process. And in this particular case, I just generated a word which is grammatically correct, I assert. Unprecedented, but it is. You understand what I mean. It's a synonym of parenthood. I generated it by thinking of parenthood or parents and the condition of being parents, parenthood. And there are lots of parallels in English for that word. And it will be a real word. Do you know how you define a real word? If you can get it in print, in some accepted publication, or in a book with an ISBN number, then it's a real word. Like developology. Okay, so that one's a real word. We'll work on parency. Okay. That was an aside. Okay, so what do you do with the same-sex couple who have children? Are they not a family? They are a family. You're on my side. Okay. So you're going to want, even in a state that doesn't have civil unions, well, what are the qualities of family? What if you don't love your family members? Are they still family members? Aha. Okay. So one of the issues is, do you define a family according to its structure or the nature of the relationships, or do you define it according to its functions? Okay. And that's an important distinction in psychology and sociology, because definitions that are structural include arrangements that are different from definitions that are functional. If you have to love each other, then a whole bunch of people get left out of families. If you use "they should but don't," then you have difficulties. Okay, so you want it to be a group of people related by...
I think it should be included in
genetics or and or legal bonds. Want anything else? Fill in the blank. Fill in the blank. Bond that isn't legal? What kind of feeling do you want? Before your hand atrophies. Well, but your cousins, we're going to a multifaceted definition that is as inclusive as possible. That's where we're headed.
I think we need to include a mutual obligation to another person, and also we're also forgetting that there's different cultures that might have matrilineal descent, where there's just people that are related that they have an obligation to, but they're not necessarily, they don't love them, or they don't, may not know them.
Okay.
There's different cultures that you can't quantify.
But it, right, but it, actually, if we're talking about a matrilineal connection, then we're talking about genetic kinship.
Not necessarily.
Or the whatever the tradition is in that society that defines the legal bond. It may be a traditional, it may not be according to a legal system, or maybe an informal legal system, but in many situations, the people that we're connected to are not related by kinship directly, but through marriage. And we accumulate obligations to them. For example, in cultures where you have an obligation to your dead brother's widow, that's a legal bond. Yeah, the widowhood, she was married to your brother, therefore she's in your family, and that obligation is part of the, is defined then according to both kinship and marriage. But I want to get to the other kinds of obligations. I think you're close to.
Or something and become so close that they could still be family. That's not really legal.
Traumatic joint activity dyads, where the joint activity is actually processing the trauma and having shared the experience and the recovery from the experience, the consequences of the experience, and come to consider themselves family, but they are not related genetically, nor are they related by any legal bond. What makes them family? The comment is that the definition that she's using is that sharing a common history and experiences and humor and understanding is part of being a family. But does it take that to define being? Okay, so it may be one of the things that happens in a family, but happens variably and it's not definitional. Connection or togetherness. Now we have a partness of the chalk. Okay, so if you consider yourselves to be members of the family, then you're a member of the family. So the family includes people who how do you define them in? Okay, let me jump over the rest of this discussion and offer a word that I think encompasses some of what you're proposing, and I'm going to suggest commitment. If two people or more consider themselves to have a commitment to each other, which is a little bit different from obligation. Because obligation sounds like I have to do this whether I want to or not. But commitment says I consider myself. This is voluntary. Okay. So I have a commitment to this group of people. I have a sense of connection. I have a sense that I may want to support them. And that covers the people who are in same-sex or otherwise unmarried and ungenetically related groups in states that don't allow, or even in states that do. You have people here who consider themselves family who are same-sex or other sex who are not married, but they may have cohabited they may have cohabited for 30 years or 40 years. They consider themselves a family. The Census Bureau doesn't, but that's all right. Census Bureau uses its own constantly changing definition. They can't count families. They don't know how to do that. So they don't try. Okay, so I'm going to offer a definition, a working definition, for this course that I think covers everything that you want to have covered without getting you into deep difficulties of defining love, for example, which is that a family is a group of people related by or connected to each other by genetics, legal bond, or commitment. Now, that's not a universally accepted definition, and there are many people who would argue with it. My point in using it for this course is to make the course as inclusive as possible. I have given serious consideration to not bothering to define it. On the other hand, that gets me into two problems. One is the title of the course, which is the family context of human development. So what do you mean by family? So you can't finesse it that way. And the other reason why I need to is because I need a stance from which to disagree with other people's definitions of families when they annoy me. When the definitions annoy me, not when the people annoy me. Because they leave out significant groups of people, or they convert some people to second-class non-family status, or they get me into political difficulty if people want to count families, or if they want to provide social support to families and define family in a way that excludes significant numbers or anybody who deserves or is entitled to social support from the community and can't get it because they don't meet somebody's more restrictive definition of family. So I feel the obligation to come up with a definition that allows me to be as inclusive as possible. The question is whether somebody who is adopted and has never met his or her biological parents, the question is which family is that person in, or who is in that person's family? Right? Yes. By my definition, I would include everybody that person is biologically related to, including the biological parents. Okay. But then I would be defining the biological family. Okay. And the adoptive family. So the person is in, from my perspective, a large family which has some people who are related biologically, even though they have no psychological connection or no joint activities or knowledge of each other, but they are, in each other's views, related to each other. So some of you who are adopted probably know that you have some thoughts about your biological parents. And I assure you that your biological parents have some thoughts about you and wonder where you are. And the adopted person, the child who's been adopted and has never met his or her biological parents yet, may do so in the future. So there is a potential family, potential family members. And that's a very nice example of how it's very difficult to define family in a way that covers everybody under all circumstances. Take the definition of people related by commitment, legal bond, or genetics, and go through the list you just made of who's in your family. Are they all legitimately members of your family defined that way? Look at your list. Is there anybody in your list who is not related to you genetically or legally or by commitment? Okay. Eternal question. Are pets members of the family?
Yes.
Hear the original question very carefully. I will repeat it for you. List the people in your family. Hear my definition. A group of people. And how many of you know Gary Kowalski? How many of you know Gary Kowalski's work? Oh my God. Nobody. Not a single person. Gary Kowalski is the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Society, the UU Church in Burlington. Gary Kowalski is the author of a book on dogs and other people. And it's a fun, fun read. Very fun read. And very thought-provoking. So, if you think you and your dog are committed to each other, and or that the Humane Society papers that you signed are a legal bond, I'm not going to argue. I said my definition is going to be inclusive. If you want to include the fish and the dog and the cat, just don't try to convince the Census Bureau that they're members of your household because they don't count pets. But I won't argue with it. Okay. It always comes up. And every time I'm asked about it, as I was last week by Julie, is it okay in this course when you define or list two people in a dyad to include the dog? I don't know, did we give credit? I think one of you got credit for your description of the dyad with the dog. But I'm reminded that I have a movie that I used to use about a rancher, farmer out west, who in talking about his childhood was asked by his son, who was interviewing him, who he talked to when he was a child, when he had a problem. Did you talk to your parents? And the old guy says, no. I had a problem. I went out to the barn, talked to my horse, Pat. You get your emotional support from your horse, I'm not going to, you know, wherever, that's fine. I'm not going to worry about it. Okay. I'm a pretty loosey-goosey guy, and I want to be inclusive, so it's okay with me. But the point is that if the definition that we're going to use for discussion purposes includes everybody in the list that you made of people in your family, and we want to stretch it enough to include Colin's dog. Several of you listed dogs, I suspect. Any of you list a horse? Okay. If everybody you think is in your family is covered by the definition, that is validity for the definition. Okay. So I don't give you a definition that says you have to throw five people out of the people you think belong in your family. Okay? You get that? If you define the people in your family and the definition that we use covers all of them, we're golden. We got it. We got a definition that works. Okay? So you just did it. You validated that definition. Are there people you didn't define as being members of your family who might also fall in that category? Sure there are. Okay. But we're going to include them. We're going to include all the cousins that you've never met. We're going to include the biological parents that you've never met and have no relationship with. We're going to include them for the purposes of discussion, because then we can talk about the functions of the family. Then we can talk about not whether you have to have reciprocity, but how much reciprocity you have with different members. We can talk about whether or not you have positive affect with different members. We can talk about which ones you like and which ones you don't like and how that changes over time. Okay. So we can talk about the variations among the family members. We can talk about changes in the relationships among the family members. And that's what's really important. Not who they are, but how they function. And how the group of people that are most important to you affect you. How they affect your development. How you affect their development. What kinds of system do you create? What kind of microsystem do you create in the setting where you live with people you consider to be family at various times? We can talk about changes in the family. Okay, speaking of changes in the family, let's ask another question. When did your family begin? What? Well, never mind. Okay. Sorry. I don't take rejection easily. When you're born, your family began?
Yeah. They could have existed before you, but you never experienced it.
Oh, Sonnenfremdbrenner. Phenomenology. The family is the group of people related by this, experienced by the developing person. Okay. Blows the next point. How do I get around that? Would your older sibling agree?
I don't have an older sibling.
That you know of. Okay. Right? I mean, you know, there may be three or four, you just don't know about them. One of the things that's fun is discovering how little we know about our families sometimes. And I teach an advanced family systems course. One of the things we do is do genealogies, do genograms for families of origin. And one of the things that's fun that happens occasionally is that people discover, in fact, that they have older siblings that they didn't know about. Cousins that they don't know about. Sometimes people discover that their mother or father was married before and they didn't know about it until they actually go ask about the genogram. And a mother says, oh, well, do you want to know about my first husband who's never been mentioned in 20 years?
You know. I'd be kind of upset about that.
Yeah, some people are upset about that. It happens. So, you know, the older sibling that you don't know about is a reality. It's a reality. I have a recent example where a student was adopted, and that was fine, but then recently she united with her biological mother and the three younger siblings. Okay, so she has three younger siblings that she didn't know about until she found her biological mother. And the three younger siblings didn't know they had an older sibling. Now they do. They were a little surprised. And that often happens in the reunion process. People discover people they didn't know existed. Okay. So, if you are going to use a definition, then we get to think about who's in it, who's not, what their roles are, Sonnenfremdbrenner, Because within the family you may have roles, and your role may be the missing person. Your role may be the person who is not talked about. Your role may be the cousins that nobody else in the family has ever met. You still have a role, and you play it until you change it. The issue that Colin brought up is that the family is different, potentially, for each person. For each person. And it changes each time a person is born, or dies, or is adopted, or joins the family by commitment, or gets married. And the question, when did your family begin, has many different answers, depending on who you're going to consider to be in your family. From a phenomenological point of view, it started for you when you were born. But you were born into a family that may already have existed, and the existence and history of that family will affect its impact on you, because it will shape the experience that you have in the context of that family, which has a history. So the family context for your development had a history that goes back as far as you want to go back, or as far as you can go back, as each person in the family has been developed in the context of whatever his or her family was. You put that together, each person in the family has a family and joins other families, potentially, along the way. Some of you are going to get married. You join two families when you get married. You extend your family, and you extend it for everybody else. You don't have control over who your relatives marry, but they extend your family and create a different context, not only for themselves, but for other people too. I think I've mentioned before, when my daughter got married, holidays changed. Instead of having my kids exclusively to me, and maybe sharing them with their grandparents, which was okay because I kind of liked the grandparents, right? My parents, their mother's parents. And that was okay. When she got married, I had to share them with her in-laws. And I had nothing to do. I didn't even meet them until just before they got married. I had no say in this. I say, no, you can't marry. In some societies, I get the choice. I get to pick the relatives who are going to be joined. But you don't. So, the bottom line is that family, for each of us, is a dynamic, changing group of people related by da-da-da-da-da-da. And it changes quite regularly and very rapidly in some cases. As an exercise, take one of the older people in your family, somebody you consider to be in your family who's 40 or older. Okay? Just pick one. Then draw a timeline for that person and leave lots of room on the left for before that person was conceived. And then think about each event in that person's life up to now that has changed that person's family or relation to family members. So if the person you're thinking about got married, if the person that you're thinking about lived with somebody, had a relationship with somebody, had a child, any of those events that might change the family for that person, see if you can put those in a timeline. And if it's a person in your family, which is the assignment, this is just a thought thing, you know, see where you are in that person's timeline. Then, if you do that for everybody in your family on the same timeline, you begin to get a chronological list of all the changes in the family, broadly defined, over whatever period of time you can manage. And what you see is that it regularly changes. It's really quite dynamic. Okay, we'll pick up from there on Monday.
You got up too fast.